Hello there, this is Senior Editor Mark Bauerlein with another conversation in our series, Religion Culture. Today's topic is religion and the college campus. As all First Things readers are aware, higher education is at the vanguard of what we might call the sensitivity movement in American society. That is, the effort to remove from daily life those ideas, values, beliefs, practices that might offend people on the basis of their identity. Sincere and principled young Christians have often found themselves at odds with this movement, particularly during their college years. But let's not belabor the negative. Our guest this afternoon is interested more in constructive responses to the college environment, especially for religious students. He is Dr. Drew Trotter, who for many years was head of the Center for Christian Study in Charlottesville, Virginia, but who since 2009 has served as the executive director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers. Dr. Trotter, welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be here.
Great. Well, you know First Things. You attended our retreat last year in New York, and it's good to hear. You told me the other day that the study centers do often subscribe to First Things, so giving you a big
absolutely
a big welcome on that.
I've read a few articles in my day too.
Very good. So, Drew, let's jump right in. What are the Christian Study Centers?
Well, it's interesting you should ask the question in the plural, because it's absolutely correct. There is no model Christian Study Center. They really are unique to their own environments. We believe that every university and college has its own corporate culture and its own set of resources in the area to do the kinds of things that we do. So it is true that we have, I think, 23 members now in our consortium. They're all very different from one another. But what do they have in common? Well, several things. One is we work from a philosophy that says that the life of the mind is crucial to being a serious, useful disciple of Jesus in the society that we have today. So we really emphasize the notion of Christian student, not so much Christian and then just happens to be a student. We really try to help students think through what it means to be in a university or college environment that is sometimes very friendly, sometimes very hostile to them, and that's the way the world is going to be. So we want to see that happen. Secondly, we really do focus on the notion that every Christian is called by God. The notion of vocation is very important to us. And so we break this down into categories, but we don't like the categories being having seams. They really are seamless. You're called to Christ in an individual relationship to God. You're called to Christ to be active in the society that you live in and to be a part of it and to be a productive member of that society. You're called to be a member of the human family, and I don't mean that in the broad sense. I mean of the family unit. So we talk a lot about what it means to be an adult child or whatever. And then you're called to be a member of the church, and we believe it's very important that students, even during their years at university, understand what it means to be a part of a local Christian fellowship of one kind or another. But the focus, Mark, is on the discipline that they're studying and trying to think about it from a Christian perspective.
So you said you now have 23
That's
centers
right.
at 23 different campuses. Now, I noticed that your offices are located in Charlottesville. Did it? And you have a long history with the University of Virginia yourself. Did the consortium begin in Charlottesville?
Well, yes.
At the University of Virginia?
Technically, no. But the first study center that we've found anyway so far was incorporated in 1976 at the University of Virginia, yeah, in Charlottesville. I was the director of that study center for 22 years, and that's how I know anything about it. But we started the consortium 9 years ago. Again, technically, we incorporated then, but the economic crisis of 2008-2009 caused us to hold off really doing a lot for another couple of years. So we've been going actively since about 2011, 6 or 7 years. Where we've been doing what we do as a consortium.
Do the study centers have any formal relationship with the universities? Does it depend on the campus? What is the What is the official status of the study center in the eyes of the different administrations?
That's a great question too, because again, it differs widely. We encourage our members to make friends with the administration and with the faculty of study centers. Some of our study centers are focused not even on students, but on faculty. At Virginia Tech, for instance, there's a study center that is exclusively devoted to faculty, and there are one or two others as well. But we also have looked around the landscape, and here are these institutions that you rightly said are so important in our culture in your introduction, and yet the administrators are never even thought of by Christian ministries. And so we try to make friends with the provost, try to make friends with the president or whoever, and ask them how we can be a useful part of this community, and often work together with them. There's a woman who works at Hampton Sydney College, which is a small college, again in Virginia. There are a couple of these things in Virginia, but she's on the president's council now. She is invited to faculty meetings and represents a viewpoint that is clear and Christian, and yet people have gotten to know her and are willing to listen to what she has to say.
You know, Drew, I have seen over the years that conservatives or traditionalists, religious or social conservatives of various kinds, often make a mistaken assumption that the administration is going to be hostile.
Right.
And I think that people are much more open in the administration than sometimes the faculty or outsiders might think, especially in a couple of offices from which they may see a great incentive. And I mean admissions and the development office. Because if the development office can say, we can find some donors for this university by pointing to the study center as an element of our campus that is welcome and that works with us on programming. The admissions officers can appeal to some religious students whom they feel they might not otherwise be able to appeal to. Just having that presence on campus gives those administrators material to work with. And I did a program at Emory for several years, a freshman program, and I was an outspoken conservative on campus, but we got along great.
Well, you sound like you're giving a history of the study center's operations at the University of Virginia, because we went to the administration and they said, well, the Hillel, the local Jewish student group, gets all of their money through us. And so why not you as well? And we don't do that, but we have a relationship with the university where you can give a gift to the University of Virginia, almost every penny of it, not even a very large accounting charge or whatever is deducted, and two groups benefit. The study center benefits from getting new donors because the University of Virginia would regularly call us and say, are you aware of this person? They don't want to give to UVA because they're a Christian and they don't like what happened to them at UVA. And we're telling them there are other things now and all that, so we get in contact with them. They give a gift to UVA that comes directly to us, and they answer two problems. They have a problem of giving to a Christian organization who's really making a difference in the university, but they also get the university fundraisers off their back, calling them all the time. So they give, and it's a wonderful win-win relationship. Right. And it's just done nothing but develop. We probably started that about 10 years ago at UVA, but we had to win the respect of UVA first.
Well, the development officers are largely measured by how much money they bring in. The admissions offices are measured on what's happening with the applicant pool. Is it growing or is it stronger? So, I see, the win-win.
Even in the presidential office, the provost's office, you'd be surprised how many people are Christians,
yes. But
don't feel like they can speak on this issue because they have this completely garbled notion of the First Amendment and what it means and all of that sort of thing. And they love the fact that a Christian organization has come to them and wants to partner with them and isn't trying to take over you know, the university or something. And there are a lot of great things going on now just because of those kinds of relationships.
All right, so why does a student go to the Christian Studies Center? You got a student coming from all different places. They're new to campus, you know, college life. They've just left their home, their families. Why would the study center be a natural?
Well, two things. First of all, we do get students who come there with a purpose. They want to think and they want to study well, and yet they want to do so as believing Christians. And we're kind of a major option for being able to do that and do that well. But secondly, you even have another way of talking about study centers on some line between just being a campus ministry center or an academic think tank. And we try to be somewhere in the middle. And especially those of us that have buildings, not all have buildings, all aspire to having buildings, we have a place that a student can throw down their coat and lay down on a couch and take a nap. Or they can go into the library and study, or they can talk to the staff about how they should approach this particular English paper or history paper or something, and not feel threatened, obviously, or have a difficulty. So they're gathering places. We do a lot with meals. We just had one of the First Things bloggers at our annual meeting give us a wonderful theology of the Eucharist, Peter Lighthart.
Wonderful.
And talk about meals and the importance of meals for that sort of thing. So students really seek us out now.
I keep telling my English department at Emory University, we've got to open a room and have pizza night.
Yeah.
Once a week. Free pizza if you come and read and talk about literature. Get all the pizza you want. That's
exactly
what I think many of these places. And the social factor.
Yeah.
Is very powerful, especially for so many of these kids who find themselves a little lost, a little overwhelmed, uncertain, and they want peers whom they don't, you know, just share things through the screen, right?
Yeah,
and how they can break bread with them and take naps.
That's right.
It's a second home on campus, and boy, do I understand the need to get away from the dormitories.
Yes, right. And you know, the university has created this even sterile notion of what knowledge is that is troubling, and for us as Christians, I think, but also has social ramifications. If we believe that knowledge is seamless, that all truth is God's truth, then that's truth about how to think about a dating relationship every bit as much as it is about a particular technical problem in philosophy. And at a study center, you might hear conversations about any of those things going on at any time. And that is really important to us, and they just find it to be very rich. And they then develop a love for learning and a desire for learning.
They're probably starved for those teachers and mentors and other kids who are going to make the knowledge they acquire a little more than just sort of part of the achievement.
Path, exactly.
You know, the success.
That's right.
Focus. And that there are a lot of students who want meaning, you know, beyond that, and they're not getting it because,
right,
especially at the selective schools, they've been on this track since middle school.
Right? Yeah, that's right.
And I can see how some organization, some group that gives the holistic, you know, the holistic picture would make those courses that they take a little more meaningful. I think this is one sign of why the humanities have deteriorated so much, because the humanities don't fit the success model.
Oh no.
Very well. I mean, what are you gonna do with Ivan Karamazov, you know, in the achievement focus, or Jonathan, or Gulliver's Travels, you know, book four of Gulliver's Travels, for goodness sake. These things are not easily accommodated, but they're about meaning of life.
Well, you know as well as I do, Tony Cronman and others are really struggling with, and have been struggling for years now in the arts and sciences, for some unifying notion, some way of actually making this knowledge worthwhile, because they gave up on it long ago when they gave up on the notion that there is a God who actually calls you to things and wants you to study and think about beauty or truth or goodness. And that's something deep within us as human beings. We long for that. And when they find it, I think, as often happens at study centers, they're just excited about it.
Mm-hmm. I imagine you're to the point now where you've got a growing list of alumni who look back at the study centers as one of the fondest aspects of their college experience. Keep alumni lists?
Yeah.
Okay.
They all do. They all do.
Good. Yeah.
And it's very important. I mean, the one at Cornell has got folks who've been in the Justice Department and major corporate executives and that sort of thing who have just looked back on their time at Chesterton House. And this is one that's only 15 years old. But they look back on it as absolutely formative. True, again, you know, not surprisingly, at some of the elite universities, you have this kind of thing happening. The Rivendell Institute at Yale, which is one of our members, has tremendous people. William Bowden at the University of Texas, one of the most well-recognized political scientists in the country, just adores the Rivendell Institute and what he experienced there back in the 90s. So, yeah, that's happening.
Let me ask you one final question. In the last, couple of years, we've had a lot of turmoil on college campuses. Have you really responded to that, do you see the mission of the centers changing at all in relation to things going on campus, or do they pretty much focus on, we've got our ideas of things, we have things we're trying to create, for instance, the campus can go up and down, things can happen, but we want to stay focused on our own goals.
That's an interesting point, because nowadays it seems like Christian writers are picking a phrase to be known for, like James Hutter's faithful presence or John Inazu's confident pluralism, that denotes on one side the importance of having a set of truths and values that you hold to and beliefs that you hold to, but also recognizing that you're within an environment that values questioning and values discussion and needs to have some kind of mutual discussion. We're trying to understand how we work in an environment that's dominated too often, at least by students, if not even by faculty, that has a sort of postmodern view that power is all there is, and so whoever shouts loudest wins and stands up and turns their backs on, Charles Murray at Middleburg and won't even listen to him, won't even have a conversation. And we work very hard at investigating or at incorporating the whole notion of discussion regularly, because if we're not able to talk to each other, we are really in trouble in this society. And increasingly that's the case. So we trumpet that a lot, the whole notion of discussion.
I wonder if a lot of students do end up in the study centers and feel it as greatly liberating.
Yeah.
That the intellectual climate of the campus and political correctness leaves them in fear, even if they share largely the progressive postmodern principles of the secular campus. They're still worried about saying the wrong thing, making the wrong kind of joke. I mean, letting something slip. They have a couple of drinks, and at the study center, they find it a much more congenial and forgiving place.
Yeah, I think that is a great observation that I think is true. While I would want to immediately counter also that we don't have any notion of being victims. We find the university very, very often to be a very inviting place, an exciting place, especially when you go to it with a positive attitude that this knowledge is really worth something and can be interesting. So that's the norm for us anyway, as we find it on the university campus, while the fear of trigger words or microaggressions or all of these kinds of things that are describing this atmosphere today is there. I mean, UVA, you know, was very much in the news with a Rolling Stone article a couple of years ago that was just a complete fabrication and yet got huge press and a lot of belief that this was what the place was like, et cetera, et cetera. We're in a strange time in the Western world, and a very difficult one, because of the lack of any desire to even search for anything called truth, because they don't believe it exists anymore, except as it is created by the individual, that it's a purely subjective category. And to find groups and people who say, no, I don't think that's true, and want to investigate things from a perspective of a foundational notion of truth, that sort of thing, is very liberating for a lot of them, yeah.
Very good. Last thing.
Sure.
What's the website?
StudyCentersOnline.org is the consortium's website. You can go there, click on the members word in the menu, and find a whole list of where our study centers are with contact information,
events.
How to get there goes directly to their website, and you can see all of the events that those study centers have. So it's a very easy one to use. And hopefully we've got some resources there as well, where people can find discussions of, in fact, the Brothers Karamazov, with a little discussion guide, et cetera, for films and books and articles and all sorts of things.
Very good.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dr. Trotter.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you, First Things.